Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 6, Welt is a Four-Letter Word. September 19th, 2013. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. You can find me on Ravelry and Twitter as Sarah Pomegranate. I welcome your suggestions and comments. Welcome to new listeners this week: Daria's Mom, Knitter One, NML Nut, Quiltalot 3, Mars, Izome, Metuchen Yarn Bombing, and Laura Brownlee. Laura left a note on episode 5. She writes, "I am not a knitter or a spinner, so you may be curious why I am interested in listening. I choose to listen in the quiet wee hours of the morning when my mind is not preoccupied with my usual thoughts. I am transported out of my box and into a direction with an unknown destination by following along with your terminology, techniques, etc. I enjoy listening to you speak of your own quest for learning and eagerness to experiment and create, and your pride in what you've accomplished. I also find it interesting hearing about the influential people you meet along the way." And Laura says she looks forward to future episodes. Well, welcome, Laura. Thanks so much for that generous note. We have our second review on iTunes from Ziggy519. Thanks so much for that. Today's episode features segments titled A Little Bit of Learning, Off the Shelf, Yarn Lover at Large, and Ever Expanding Skill Set. Our little bit of learning this week is about the word welt, W-E-L-T. It comes to us from Middle English, and the first known use is from the 15th century. The first definition is often from shoemaking, a strip of leather sewn into other material to reinforce the sturdiness of a shoe. It can also mean a tape or covered cord sewn into a seam, and then later developed into welts or raised bumps on the skin. In knitting, welts create texture, visual interest, and shaping, and they are a key feature in the Batade Capelet by Stephen West. I have the first 3 welts and the first 2 spans of garter stitch completed on this capelet. It's a beautiful pattern. It's working up quite nicely, but the welts have been giving me a few fits. What happens in this pattern is that you knit alternately with 2 different colors of yarn, and the welts are formed by knitting 8 rows of knit stitching in the round, then picking up and seaming together those 8 rows of knitted fabric so that you have a small pocket or welt in the fabric. When done with a contrasting color of yarn, as I've chosen a kind of acid green color as a contrast to my hand spun, it creates a great deal of visual interest. In the case of this pattern, it was designed specifically by Stephen West during his trip to the Ifugao region of the Philippines. The alternating sections of garter ridge and welts are meant to imitate the landscape of the rice terraces in that region. I've determined that my difficulty in picking up and knitting the stitches of the welts is due to my lack of experience as a knitter and my inability to read my own knitting with ease. I'm looking at the back of my knitting and trying to figure out which stitch 8 rows down to pick up and knit together with a stitch that's on my needle so that I get a nice smooth look to the welt. even though it's been frustrating, doing this work and knitting these welts is teaching me how to read my knitting. And that's been a great benefit of working on this pattern. I just completed the third welt section on the batade capelet. There are 10 welts in the pattern. So with 7 more to go, I think I will be pretty accomplished with welts and picking up stitches on the back of my knitting by the time I'm done. And hopefully welt won't be a 4-letter word when I complete the pattern. Off the shelf. This week I started reading The Yarn Whisperer, My Unexpected Life in Knitting by Clara Parks. Clara Parks is the author and editor of The Knitter's Review, which is an online guide to needles, yarn, all kinds of products related to knitting. She left a tech career in San Francisco long ago and started a life in Maine where she took up her passion for the fiber arts. She's done a lot of writing since then, a lot of teaching, and a lot of very interesting projects in the fiber arts. And this is her latest book. Off the Shelf is a bit of a misnomer because most of the reading I do is on my Kindle app on my iPhone. I don't have a Kindle or a Nook or any of those devices. I try to use my iPhone for as many different functions as I can possibly think of rather than buy another device. And I do enjoy using the Kindle feature and the Kindle app on my iPhone. I find that when I have a little bit of time, I can get some reading done. And often I don't take books with me to all of the places I might do some reading. So I'm nearly halfway through, and I've really been enjoying The Yarn Whisperer. One of the literary devices that Clara Parks uses extensively in The Yarn Whisperer is this idea of metaphor. She writes a memoir of her life, and she ties together various episodes of her life with key terms and key techniques in knitting. She does this extraordinarily well, and in a way that prompts the reader to do a lot of metaphorical thinking as well. In a future episode, I might take up metaphor as a topic for a little bit of learning. For today, though, I'd just like to share a short and very powerful excerpt from The Yarn Whisperer to give you an idea of Clara Parks' use of metaphor in this work. This is from her chapter titled, A Good Steek. Cut something apart, and there's always a momentary shock to the system. What was once whole is now sundered. Slice through the veins of your knitted fabric, and the newly exposed stitches may easily unravel as they scramble back toward a home that no longer exists. At the same time, there's no doubting the sense of possibility that accompanies this opening, a curiosity about what the new fabric may hold. There's a way to do it right, without pain. We work a series of steps called a steek, so that the stitches are prepared for what's coming and can absorb the shock, heal without any scars, and even thrive in their new environment. According to Alice Darmore, steek is an old Scots word for hardening a heart or closing a gate, a fitting way to describe what you're doing to those stitches, ready for what could be a traumatic experience. Even now, I keep discovering stray loose ends from that shocking cut when I was 8 years old. A favorite cup will get broken, a pen thrown away by accident. Some unexpected change is foisted upon me, and I am overcome with a powerful panic I know is not rooted in the present. I hope that excerpt convinces you to pick up Clara Parks' The Yarn Whisperer. It's an excellent memoir. I'm really enjoying reading it. I believe it's number one in knitting on Amazon, and a great read, a quick read, and something that might get you thinking about the metaphors in your own life and how they could relate to the craft that you're working on. Yarn Lover at Large. I'm very fortunate to live within driving distance of several great local yarn stores. One that I visited for the first time this weekend is Conversational Threads. It's in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. The shopkeeper, Cindy, and proprietor is extremely friendly and helpful. And I also chatted for a time with Sue while I was there. She helped me make some decisions on yarn purchases. We had kind of an objective when going. I wasn't sure if we could complete it, but I went with Samuel, my partner, and the co-inhabitant of Yinhu. I'm planning on filling October with hat knitting in preparation for the holidays, and I had some hat patterns picked out. I've never knit anything for Samuel, so this was a very big deal because we were going to try and select some yarn that would be suitable for one of these hat patterns. There are a number of seating areas in Conversational Threads, couches, chairs, by windows, in the back of the shop, all around. And so Samuel made himself comfortable for a while I got the lay of the land and looked at the great variety of yarn in the shop. Picked out something for some future knitting for myself, and then started selecting some things that might be appropriate for a hat pattern for Samuel. We went back and forth about a number of things. We had been looking at worsted weight yarn, but we finally made a decision on some locally made fingering weight yarn. So I changed my idea for the hat pattern a little bit. We had everything wound while we went for a great late afternoon Thai lunch just down the street and came back to beautifully balled yarn, ready to go, and overall a very nice September afternoon in Emmaus. There was a culinary shop just down the street where I picked up a very nice bag of lavender for only $8. So I went home very happy with my purchases. And very happy to meet the folks at Conversational Threads. One of the reasons I wanted to take the drive to Emmaus and meet the folks at the shop is that I have signed up to take the bus trip to Rhinebeck to the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. On the Saturday of the festival in October, there's a bus trip, I believe it's now two buses, going from Conversational Threads up to the Dutchess County Fairgrounds in New York. I'm very excited to be traveling with this friendly group of people and look forward to telling you more about that. This week, Ravelry opened up a road trip feature so that if you're planning a road trip, you can find out what kind of yarn shops are on your way or just a short little trek off your planned route. I didn't use the road trip planner for this particular trip to Conversational Threads, but it's something I will certainly think about when I plan future road trips. It seems like this road trip feature on Ravelry met with a lot of excitement when it premiered this week. It's a great way to promote local businesses, so I hope you'll check it out on your next trip. Ever-expanding skill set. Well, last week I mentioned that at the Jazz Fest, I met a woman from Locust Lawn Farm who had been working with a friend to dye some yarn with natural dyes, including goldenrod. And the yarn was homespun that was a really lovely shade of yellow. Then I kept noticing, driving around the area, that there is a lot of goldenrod, which is great news for bees making honey. And turns out, it could be good news for me too, because I decided to try my hand at dyeing some fiber. My plan is to try some dyeing on two different kinds of fibers, and I'll talk a little bit more about the fibers and how they take the dye in a future episode, because this week I concentrated on just picking the goldenrod and making the dye. I'd like to see if the dye takes differently to different kinds of fiber, and so I plan to try dyeing Falkland from Feeder Brook Farm in Maryland and some Shetland that I've had from Spinner's End Farm in Curtis, Michigan. This morning I went goldenrod picking, and I didn't have to fight too hard with the bees for the goldenrod, which was good news, and I left plenty of goldenrod in the field so the bees can have their way with it. I picked 5 good bunches of goldenrod and then carefully cut all of the blossoms off of them. Then, working outside on the porch because I was a little bit concerned about pollen and allergens in the house. I'm not sure how we all react to goldenrod. Being that it was such a lovely day and we have a big green egg charcoal grill outside on the porch, I thought I would try cooking down the goldenrod and making the dye over an outdoor fire. So I put the goldenrod flowers in about a gallon of filtered water, brought it to a boil, and let that simmer over open fire for about an hour. Then I removed it from the heat, and I'm letting the liquid cool with the goldenrod blossoms still in it. The water is a lovely shade of golden yellow, and in some of the research that I did, it said the dye will get stronger if you let the entire mixture cool with the blossoms still in it. So that's still sitting outside. I haven't strained it yet. This is being recorded on Sunday afternoon. Next week, I plan to investigate mordants, which are used to help the fiber take the dye and then engage in the dyeing process. The other thing I've been working on in my ever-expanding skill set is some cooking. This week I have a recipe for you. It's sweet and spicy skillet stir fry. It's something that I've developed with some techniques that I use pretty frequently at my house, and I thought you might be interested in trying this out. The farmers markets have a great variety of produce available, and this is a way to capture all of that great taste and put it on your table. At Yinhoo, I have an electric stove. If you have a gas range, then you may want to use a wok for a stir fry, but I rely on my trusty cast iron pan. It's my favorite kitchen tool by far, and something that always turns out great food. So I'll tell you a little bit how I make this sweet and spicy skillet stir fry using my cast iron pan. First, I made a marinade for some pork chops. I had boneless pork chops, but you can do this marinade with any protein. I used equal parts balsamic vinegar, brown sugar, and a chili sauce or chili paste. I whisked that together, and then I slathered it over the pork chops and let them sit for at least 6 hours. Overnight is better. This may be a good place for me to insert that I'm an improvisational cook. That is, I rarely use recipes. I look at recipes, books on cooking, television food shows if I see them, for ideas. And what I try to do is cultivate a wide variety of cooking techniques and skills. This allows me to draw from my pantry and purchase what's fresh and in season and turn that into delicious food without having to worry about a recipe or buying food that will only be used for one recipe and then will just sit in the refrigerator or go unused in the pantry indefinitely. What that means in terms of this recipe I'm about to share is that you could use almost any protein and any collection of vegetables to achieve a great tasting meal. If you're not an improvisational cook, but you're interested in learning more about this method of cooking, I highly recommend a book called The Improvisational Cook by Sally Schneider. Okay, back to the recipe for sweet and spicy skillet stir fry. You have your protein, pork chops, chicken, shrimp, whatever it is, marinating in the sweet and spicy marinade in your refrigerator, and you begin to prepare your vegetables. All summer long, when I buy corn from a local farm stand, I make enough for us to eat, and I always make a couple extra ears. If they turn out to be really great corn, then I cut the corn off of those extra ears and store it in the freezer for later use. This is what I used when I made the skillet stir fry this week. To prepare the vegetables, get your cast iron skillet or your wok very hot. Add some olive oil or other fat to the pan, and then throw in first the corn kernels. I like to sear my corn kernels so that they're almost blackened on a couple of sides. Get them really crispy. They almost start to pop like popcorn in the pan. Then as I finish cooking each vegetable, I put it into a bowl on my counter. So I put the corn into there, and then I add very thinly sliced onions and red bell peppers, and I saute those. When those are done, I put those into the bowl on the counter. Then I add French cut string beans. These I also like to get a little bit charred in the pan and wilted enough so that they're not incredibly crunchy. Put those into the bowl on the counter. And the bowl on the counter allows me to keep the food relatively warm, but not overcrowd my pan. A cast iron skillet isn't incredibly large, and even in a wok, you don't want to put so much food into the wok that it brings the temperature down, and then you're really boiling your vegetables rather than sauteing them. The next thing I add is some baby eggplant, and this has been a really great find at the farmer's market. Baby eggplant have a much more tender consistency and a sweetness to them that is unlike the very large aubergine eggplants that you might use to make a tapenade. I slice a long baby eggplant into medallions or a small baby eggplant into halves or quarters and saute that as well in the skillet. That goes into the bowl on the counter. Finally, I take a very large portion of kale and I finely chop it, and then I put it into the bowl, toss it with all of the very warm vegetables, and then cover it with a lid or a plate. After sauteing the pork chops in the skillet, I remove those as well, and I pour in all of the marinade. I let that get very hot in the skillet and reduce slightly so it's this sweet and sticky glaze. And I pour that glaze over all of the vegetables in the bowl and toss it around so that the kale wilts and everything is covered with a small amount, but just enough to make the vegetables very interesting. And then I plate that with the vegetables and the pork chop or other meat on the side, and a little bit of extra glaze poured over the top. If you're cooking in a wok, you may want to cut your protein into small pieces before you cook them. That will allow for even cooking. In a skillet, it's easier to saute a large piece of meat. The sweet and spicy skillet stir fry has been an enjoyable late summer, early fall dinner at our house, and I hope you get to try it at your house and tell me what you think. Our quote this week is brought courtesy of Goodreads. Silence makes the real conversation between friends. It's not the saying, but the never needing to say that counts. Margaret Lee Runbeck. Thank you for listening. The music in today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or leaving a reply to this episode on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Jump a river naked, hike a country mile, it's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.